From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, teachers say they hope the governor will fix problems with the controversial Common Core learning standards. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on same-day voter registration and a heartwarming story of a woman's four-decade search for a nurse who cared for her. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Teachers say they hope Governor Cuomo's newly appointed Education Commission will fix problems with the controversial Common Core learning standards, but they say a lot has to change, including the unpopular tests associated with the standards. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The task force will include educators, teachers, parents, officials from the state education department, and the teachers' unions.
While it might not seem surprising that several teachers and their union representatives are on the panel, it's significant because the governor has been feuding with teachers for months. He's called them part of a broken education bureaucracy, and in exchange, teachers have held large protests against Cuomo's policies. The vice president of New York State United Teachers, the state's largest teachers' union, Andy Pallotta, says he's thrilled that teachers are included on the commission.
Teacher from New York City, a teacher from Utica. These are the folks that are in the classroom every day, and they're the ones that have been calling us with, this is the problem. This is the reality of the Common Core rollout.
He says he hopes the panel represents a reset on what many believe is a failed system. Dissatisfaction with Common Core and its related tests has led to one-fifth of students boycotting the third through eighth grade math and English exams last spring.
So you've had hundreds of thousands of students opt out of the tests. You have people who want local control. They feel that this Common Core rollout has been a disaster, and everything from it has been a disaster. So a commission, a task force taking these issues on, we're hopeful, but again, the proof is in the pudding.
The governor in New York does not directly control education policy, but earlier this year, Cuomo inserted into the state budget the requirement that new teacher evaluations be more dependent on standardized tests. The legislature reluctantly went along with the provision. That development in part helped fuel the test opt-out movement. Billy Easton, with the pro-school funding group Alliance for Quality Education, says he doesn't think the boycotts will end and the controversy will subside until the teacher reviews are less dependent on the tests. He says the commission should also look at changing a new requirement that 144 struggling schools in danger of state receivership also be judged by their students' test scores and whether or not they opt out of the tests.
The reaction is against the quantity of testing, but also against how the tests are used in ways that really pervert the educational process.
Easton says the commission is an opportunity for the governor to change the course. The state's education commissioner, Mary Ellen Elia, has also been named to the panel. Elia, in a statement, says she's happy to work with the commission, but she says she and the State Board of Regents have already begun reviewing Common Core and will soon begin a statewide survey that will give teachers and parents the opportunity to comment on what's wrong with the standards and how to fix them. And she says she's already taken steps to shorten the tests. Cuomo is hoping to have recommendations from the panel by the end of the year that he can propose in the 2016 legislative session. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York City returned to the national political stage, visiting a number of places, including Iowa. And this from the GOP in New York response. It would appear Mayor Bill de Blasio is bored with his job already. While he tends to his presidential ambitions, quality of life in the city is declining, crime is increasing, and the public school system is an embarrassment. Why are we not surprised that he would rather do a public forum in Iowa than New York City?
Well, that is predictable, as you suggest, from the Republicans. They're the opposition, the loyal or not so loyal opposition. Here's the thing about de Blasio. He and his advisors have clearly decided that he could be the left-wing approach to Democratic politics, equality, evening things out, making sure that everybody had a decent style of life. His problem, of course, is that there are others in front of him. There's Elizabeth Warren, there's Bernie Sanders, and he ain't going to be the left-wing answer over those people. So it is interesting because, as we know, there's been this deadly serious opposition from the governor to de Blasio. And when you mention his presidential ambitions, we know he's not the only New Yorker with presidential ambitions. We know that Andrew Cuomo has them also. And that, of course, explains why Cuomo keeps punching up on de Blasio, because just in the same way Lindsay and Rockefeller duked it out, both of whom had presidential pretensions, and both of whom knocked each other out so hard that they never got where they were going. I've never understood this one, to be honest with you, but clearly the Cuomo and de Blasio forces do, and more Cuomo, because Cuomo's the one who tends to beat up on de Blasio more than the other way around.
Meanwhile, alongside all of this, staying tuned is U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, who has entered the investigation into the Buffalo Billions. You spoke to Blair Horner about this, who said there are no allegations of impropriety, just information gathering, but usually where there's smoke, there's fire.
There is. You know, if you're a U.S. attorney, you don't go gather information like that unless you think that there's something irregular that has happened. And so they are looking for the way in which money and politics and campaign contributions and whether or not you get a highly sought after construction permit, all of those things go together. You know what? This is the way it's always been. The question is, did somebody at some point say, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you? If the U.S. attorney can find that, interesting. And of course, as we have noted on this program, who is the U.S. attorney for Buffalo? It sure ain't Preet Bharara. It's a man, Manihokel. And what is his interest in all of this? His wife is the lieutenant governor of New York State. And she, of course, pays homage to the governor. So it's all very confusing. Let's see if Bharara makes something that we can understand out of all of it.
You've often pointed out the not-so-democratic principles, regulations, and rules in New York State, Alan. And to that end, you spoke this week with the now executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, Blair Horner, about
Yes.
why the state can't have same-day voter registration.
Well, everybody knows the answer to that. The fewer people who vote, the better the Republicans do. So every time there's a move on to reform the voting system, as many states have, so that you don't have to register before you even know you want to vote. You know, you register on the day that you vote in many states now. And so that's what people want in New York State. The Republicans, of course, knowing that it would cost them some votes, to say no. As long as the Senate is Republican, you can be sure that that's going to be the position of the Republican Party. We know it. We know that when the Republicans take over in various states, the first thing they do is try to make it harder to vote. And they set up all kinds of conditions. Nothing new here.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. As many communities around the state and the country deal with a surge in opioid abuse, Schenectady County New York Sheriff Dominic D'Agostino and members of the county legislature this week announced the creation of a countywide drug unit to address the growing heroin epidemic. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and filed this report.
Schenectady County Legislature Chair Anthony Jasinski opened Wednesday morning's press conference by citing some statistics related to the heroin problem affecting the country.
According to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the number of heroin users in America has increased by about 80% between 2007 and 2012. And Schenectady County is no different than any other county in the capital region. And as such, we've been experiencing this similar trend.
Schenectady County's new drug unit will build on existing efforts by Sheriff D'Agostino's office. The sheriff said since 2012, two sheriff patrol deputies have worked part-time to go after heroin traffickers.
We've made 279 purchases of drugs. We've executed more than 77 search warrants. We've recovered approximately $160,000 in cash and five vehicles worth more than $55,000. Also, we've recovered through either purchases or executions of search warrants 20 handguns.
D'Agostino said the numbers are impressive but alarming, and that more help is needed. With funding included in the 2016 county budget that is under consideration, the sheriff's office seeks to create two full-time investigators and a full-time inspector position for the drug unit. The budget vote is scheduled for October 14th, and officials hope to have the unit up and running by January 1st. D'Agostino said law enforcement is part of a three-pronged approach undertaken by the county to fight heroin abuse and addiction.
I mean, it's great that we go out and try to rehabilitate. We need to. It's great that we try to educate our young. It's great that we try to engage in prevention programs. But you got to have that law enforcement component working hand in hand with it for this to be a total success.
The drug unit will work with municipalities throughout the county in both urban and rural areas. D'Agostino said the drug unit is similar to what's being done throughout the region. He mentioned the partnership between Washington and Warren counties as an example. Recently, a video of a woman shooting drugs at a Schenectady bus stop went viral. D'Agostino said the video brings attention to the issue.
I think it draws attention to the gravity of the situation. I know that family personally, so I'd rather not speak too much to it. They've gone through their trials and tribulations, and it's kind of heartbreaking to watch. And I think probably everybody in this room has had some connection to someone that's had to deal with this issue. And if you have, you certainly know what it does to a family.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
20 years ago, an event that many believe signaled the death knell for the Plattsburgh, New York region occurred. The Plattsburgh Air Force Base was officially closed and decommissioned at the end of September 1995. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley looks back.
1995 was a day of solemn, sad ceremony as flags were lowered and 380th Air Refueling Wing Commander Colonel Robert Dawson bid farewell.
Today we are closing a significant chapter in the history of Plattsburgh, New York. For the men and women of the 380th Air Refueling Wing, your mission is complete. Well done. Well done.
The closure was bittersweet, and many were angry, including then-Congressman John McHugh.
For more than 200 years, this place has served the defense of our great nation. As the longest continuously operating military facility anywhere in America, Plattsburgh has always served this country. Along with our pain is anger. Anger born of the fact that what has happened here is wrong. Wrong for the Air Force, wrong for the taxpayers of this nation, and wrong for the great people of Plattsburgh who have for so long served this place and this nation so well.
Then-Mayor Clyde Rabideau recalls a busy, anxious time.
It was like losing a member of our family, and we went through the entire grief process from denial to anger and through all the other steps until finally acceptance.
Former Congressman Bill Owens, who succeeded McHugh, came to Plattsburgh because he was stationed at the base and was at the closing ceremony.
It was almost a sense of disbelief that this was occurring. For, you know, the community, this was the final straw. You know, they had seen the troops departing, the families departing. They had seen, you know, the slowdown in the economy that resulted from that. So I think that for most people, this was the dramatic defining moment.
The closure process had actually begun 2 years earlier when the Base Realignment and Closure Commission shocked not only the Plattsburgh area, but many in the military when it voted to close the base. Current Peru Town Supervisor Peter Glushko is a retired lieutenant colonel who read the base history during the closure ceremony. He recalls that the base had initially been slated for expansion, not closure.
We were actually still working on the expansion up until the day they made the announcement. The announcement caught us completely by surprise. It wasn't, in our minds, in any way justified. It was a political decision. And it was frustrating. It's just very frustrating. And, you know, you're powerless to stop it. There were a lot of hostile feelings about that, you know. The space on that base was unbelievable. It was so suited for what needed to be done with an air mobility wing, and it was just taken away from us but with a political decision.
As the military left, the community faced the uncertainty and challenge of redeveloping the 5,000-acre property. In a 1993 interview, Interim Transition Director Colonel Arthur Packard said the conversion to civilian use could take decades.
Well, it's a long, involved process, and although it will be done faster than it has been done in the past, it is President Clinton's idea and hope to do this faster. Speed is not necessarily the goal, but ease is the goal, and making it happen as easily as possible so that the community gets the best use that they can as quickly as they can out of the base facilities.
Redevelopment was predicted to take more than 25 years. 20 years later, only six parcels on 33.5 acres remain, and 99% of the base has been redeveloped. Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Gary Douglas.
It was certainly daunting, but it was all the more so in those very early days because it was so unexpected. In early 93, I remember sitting in the mayor's office when we got the official news that Plattsburgh was to receive the new Air Mobility Command, which would double the military presence here. Suddenly we were on this upward roller coaster. Then, cynically, we got pulled into the list. And then when that BRAC decision was made, we were sitting in the mayor's office once again, and it was 8-1 to close Plattsburgh Air Force Base. So the reuse effort came off that incredibly unexpected roller coaster ride, whereas some bases had some lead up to the fact that they had been targeted for closure. We were targeted to double.
But time and successful redevelopment have not eased the bitterness or sense of betrayal over the closure of the base. Looking back, Owen says the economy is better, but the community has lost a critical element.
I think economically, we are probably better off. I think as a community, from the point of view of the diversity, I think we've lost that. We did recover, I think, economically and continue to recover. So I think in that sense, that was less problematic to me than the loss of the people.
The Plattsburgh Air Force Base Museum will commemorate the 20th anniversary of the closure at 5 p.m. September 30th. The American flag that flew during the original closure ceremony will fly and will once again be ceremonially lowered.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Pope Francis proclaimed the Internet was a gift from God. Amanda Scarpinati might just be inclined to agree with that. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports Scarpinati's four-decade search for a nurse who cared for her as an infant burn victim came to fruition this week thanks to social media.
In the mid-1970s, when she was 3 months old, Scarpinati rolled off a couch, falling on a hot steam humidifier. Baby Amanda was brought up to the Albany Medical Center burn unit from her home in Athens, Greene County, for treatment as she recovered from third-degree burns. During her stay, a photographer snapped several pictures of her in the arms of a young nurse. The photos appeared in a medical center report. Scarpinati somehow obtained a copy and kept it for some 37 years. Scarpinati says looking at those pictures gave her something to hold dear. instilling hope and courage as she grew up bullied because she'd been disfigured by those awful burns. No longer the case following surgeries. Scarpinati tried to find out who her caregiver was some 20 years ago with no luck. Then, an idea. Social media. She took a chance and...
It blew up. It blew up. I was shocked the amount of shares that it got. I mean, because I just posted it on my Facebook. I was like, maybe 20 people will share it. Maybe. Within 12 hours, it just exploded. And it was posted on a local news station, and from there, it just grew.
Within hours of posting her story and the old photos on September 16th, the big break came. A woman named Angela Leary, an RN, who filled in the missing details.
I happened to see the picture. I knew the nurse, and I was able to give the adult baby, the baby in the picture, a name, and that was such a pleasure for me to be able to do that.
Susan Berger was the nurse in the photos. Berger today oversees the health center at Cazenovia College in New York's Finger Lakes region. Scarpinati says the initial reconnection came via cell phone.
It was very surreal. I was driving, actually, when I got to talk to her, and her voice matched her picture. Just a sweet sounding. And I just couldn't believe I had a name to go with that face that I've had for so many years. And knowing she's real, she's really there, you know, I'm talking to her, she exists, and now I'm getting a chance to meet her. Dream come true.
And when they met face-to-face Tuesday at Albany Med, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Cameras clicked. The two women hugged. The small mic Scarpinati wore for the press conference detected one excited, happy heartbeat.
I'm just so full of emotion. I don't even know how to put it into words. It was amazing to actually see her and thank her and hug her. And
Berger, too, could hardly wait to meet the baby grown up and in person.
Yeah, and I had seen the photos and the press releases, and as I said, she's gorgeous. Obviously, she faced the adversity in her childhood, and certainly we should say to all of those who bullied and picked on her, look now. Look at her now. Nonetheless, I have no doubt I'll get to know the beautiful person inside there, too. So,
absolutely.
Jim Barba is president and CEO of Albany Medical Center.
There are plenty of sad moments at a medical center like this, a tertiary quaternary care provider. When I attend an event like today's, it grounds me again. It reminds me that miracles do happen here every single day. Obviously, a miracle happened in 1977. Secondly, that we are about the care of children. Our job is to first save them, as was the case here, then to restore them to good health, then to send them on their way so that they can lead useful, productive lives as adolescents and then as adults. And that's, again, exactly what happened here.
Scarpinati appreciates the care she received during her stay at Albany Med.
Thank the nurses, thank the CNAs, the aides. They keep it going, and they are there for the patients. And I think maybe they're a little underappreciated.
Your advice to other folks looking for lost folks from photographs is?
Facebook. Yeah.
Okay. Video of the reunion is posted at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1540. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.